Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's up, everybody? What's up, monkeys? Welcome. This is a review of one of the biggest movies of the summer and one of the maybe the best sequels ever. We will be talking about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. No, I kid, because there's no fucking way. This is the most adorable Snark Monkey podcast review ever, because it's me and the wife and the kid talking about Mission Impossible Fallout. Here we go. Larry Morgan, your genial host of Snark Monkey, along with two previous guests on the Snark Monkey podcast at various times, my lovely wife, Sharla.
Hello.
and my lovely son, Alexander.
Hello.
Okay. And this is clearly a huge mistake. But here we go, everybody. Happy Snark Monkey.
Happy Snark Monkey. Oh,
yeah. We're clinking.
Yeah, we are.
We're Colonel clinking.
This is a cocktail hour edition of the Snark
Monkey. Late night Snark Monkey.
Yeah, that's right. Snark Monkey after hours. And tonight, because here's what's so adorable about this, since we actually saw Mission Impossible Fallout as a family, I thought we would review it as a family. And also what's interesting about this is that it spans so many generations. I mean, clearly, most people know that Mission Impossible, the film series, is based up on a television series from the late 60s, early 70s.
Sounds right to me.
It was around for a little while, had a regular ever-changing cast anchored by Peter Graves, who was always kind of the head guy who received the secret mission,
right?
On the they do actually a lot of great throwbacks to the original series, and we can talk about this in the review of the one we're coming up with. But even for the film series, I don't know if you guys remember this, but the very first Mission Impossible came out in 1996.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now, yeah. Actually. I can fact check you this whole time.
So you were actually 5 years old, Alex, so you probably... I don't even know if...
Loved it.
Have you ever seen the first Mission Impossible?
I think so. I think that was one of those films that, like, one of my friend's dad had on, and then he was like, boys, check this out, you know? And we sort of saw a movie we probably shouldn't have seen at that age. Yeah.
But it has become a little bit of a tradition for us, because I believe we've seen now the last three, Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, and now Fallout. I think we've seen together as a family.
That's right.
Because it's been kind of summertime viewing.
I remember seeing the third one, too, Mission Impossible 3, with at least one of you. I'm not sure.
Probably Dad.
Or maybe we saw that one all together.
We might have. I remember that being my real, like, first jump into the series and actually like following, like tracking everything.
Yeah, Charlotte, because we'll get onto this movie in a second, but as far as the series goes, you've actually gravitated to wanting to see these when they come out, and you are not necessarily like a big action chase scene kind of fan. You don't gravitate to that. So why, what is it about this series, or maybe the last few movies in particular? Is it the cruise factor? Is it that you had a good time somewhere in the middle there and you thought they would live up to it?
You know, honestly, I've never thought about it until you just asked me, but I think it's honestly Tom Cruise, the Cruise factor, as you put it. Just like with the Bourne stuff, it was all about Matt Damon. And it's not about me being like a huge fan of either one of those actors necessarily, like having to go see other films that they've done, but I just love them. I love how they embody these characters. And so then I can look the other way with the stuff that I would normally not gravitate toward, like the
You're not a
gratuitous violence.
Yeah, you're not a big. I mean, you've actually watched some pretty intense stuff.
An extended freaking chase scenes. What is it about that? I mean, oh my God. Yeah, so many extended chase scenes.
Yeah, you tend to start
and always a motorcycle involved.
You always tend to glaze over when somebody either gets in a car or gets on a motorcycle. But
I go potty.
I have to say, though,
long movies.
Clearly, this series has been highly successful. They keep making them. And I think Tom Cruise is a factor because there is something about his persona, even though he's got, there is this mixed persona because there is a little bit of baggage that comes with Tom Cruise because of the Scientology thing. And he's kind of an odd person in person, you know, when you see him in interviews and he's had, not any sort of scandalous private life because he's... Even though it's been pretty well known, he keeps himself pretty closed off from the media for the most part.
Right.
And he's just this kind of you see interviews with him and he's kind of a automaton. I mean, he's kind of just in auto mode a little bit.
I don't think he's doing those anymore, though.
He's not doing as much press.
He's not doing the Oprah or, you That's know, true. The jumping on the couch.
Well, I'm sure his PR people were like, please stop.
Yeah.
please.
Yeah. Never do that again. Yeah. Well, that's because in this day and age, that immediately becomes a meme and Tom Cruise.
Yeah. It does.
Now, having said that, I think we can also point to the fact that Tom Cruise has done some really genuine, good dramatic work. I mean, I think we can point out, I mean, even when he was really younger, born on the 4th of July, he got a ton of attention for.
Yep.
I thought he was solid in Rain Man. I thought he was more watchable than Dustin Hoffman was.
Yeah, in a way, actually, yeah.
And the supporting roles he's done in everything from Magnolia in particular, which was, I think, a character that was very unlikable and just like insanely over the top in terms of this misogynist, like just horrible character. As well as Tropic Thunder, where he's the network,
which he nailed. It's one of my favorite performances of that whole film.
Yeah,
but let's get back to the Cruise meme comment.
Yeah,
I think there should be a meme of Tom running, like his running sequence where he's running,
sprinting full force.
Sprinting, honestly, you got to give the guy credit. This is the first film I've seen him in. And I don't see a lot of Tom Cruise films, but this is the first time I remember seeing him and looking at him and going, oh, wow, he's getting older.
Yeah.
This guy's getting older.
But he's still running.
Oh, no, that's my point. I mean, I was so impressed and you can't double that. Not that he has a body double, because we all know he never has.
No, of course he does. People do his stunts.
Oh, okay.
But he makes a big deal about, especially the last three movies, I think, because he's aging. I think they've gone out of their way to point out. And part of it is because they make for really effective on-screen moments. I mean, I think the stuff, like in particular the last movie, Rogue Nation, where he's clinging to the side of the plane, and he actually was clinging to the side of the plane.
Yeah, every
he's clinging on everything.
He clings to something every movie.
But they certainly are more effective moments, the fact that we can clearly see that they're not CGI moments, that they're not like background. And in this one, I guess the big deal was the parachuting sequence. Let's talk about Fallout. So let's just do a very quick capsule kind of what you think thing, because this movie comes in with a lot of pre-hype, not from the studio as much as from people who were literally saying it might be the best of the series, that it could be one of the best action movies ever. I mean, Rotten Tomatoes, I think, still has it somewhere at like 98% or something. I'll just go first and say, I thought it was really solid. I'm going to bring up some, you know, picky points that I have about it, but...
No spoilers!
No,
definitely spoilers.
I don't know.
Certainly spoilers.
I don't know. I don't know if I can spoil this movie.
Yeah, it's hard to remember.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, I don't think we need to go out of our way to mention who turns on who.
Because everyone turns on everyone, and then that person turns on who they turned on.
If we could use an analogy here, it would be, it's mask taking off mask taking off mask. Oh, and then they're taking off a mask.
But there
it's
aren't like, even that
it's
many
non-stop.
Masks.
It's,
you're talking
no,
about
No, I'm
like,
talking about metaphorically.
Yeah, well, what's so funny is that it was Jim Carrey the whole time, and he was wearing all the masks.
So, Mission Impossible Fallout, let's just say, what did you think? I mean, do you want to give it a grade? You want to see what let's start with Alex.
I'm exactly with you. I think it was really entertaining. It was solid. It was one minor tangent I want to make is that it looks like other than the past two films, this has been directed by someone different every time.
No. Oh, the last two. Yes.
The last two was the same. Was Christopher McQuarrie.
Yeah. And then, he worked with on the Jack Reacher movie.
So something I want to break down at some point if you're down.
Those are good.
Yeah, those are good. But like what makes a Mission Impossible movie a Mission Impossible movie?
Yeah.
And for me, this was like they were trying to hit every single tick box of what makes a Mission Impossible movie a Mission Impossible movie. And I can't even necessarily define
More than once.
Yeah, more than once. But I remember liking Rogue Nation a little bit better than this one. And I have to formulate a little bit more about why. But this movie was just so convoluted at times. And some of the writing felt really stale. Some of the dialogue felt very like, I don't know. It just felt a little stale to me.
Okay, well, let's get further into that after we talk just about generally. But
excellent.
But favorable for the most part in terms of a good like popcorn.
I had a great time. Yeah. Absolutely. I had almost threw up and there was a lot of vertigo, but I had a great time.
Yeah, which is a good sign for an action movie.
True.
Like, the last three have had moments like that for me. And I think we saw Ghost Protocol in IMAX, didn't we?
I think so.
And that almost literally made me heat.
That's the like building... Running
yeah,
or climbing.
Yeah, that was the building climbing one. Yeah. Sharla.
Okay, just real quick, you mean just like a quick, what do I think?
Yeah.
I would just like to see, and I think this is a female perspective, I would love to see one of these films be brave, even if it's like, even the Bourne movies, where you don't have to have it so formula. Let's take out maybe just one extended chase scene there, you know, with the cars and the motor. You know, honestly, I would have been so riveted by a really cool dialogue between Alec Baldwin and Tom Cruise's character. Anything. I mean, I don't even know what I'm talking about, but I'm just saying, you know, let's be brave and make it more feminine just a little bit. I think it would really maybe bring more people in. I want to see more of that. I want the action too. That's totally why I'm there too. But I would love to see it just a little more nuanced there. I liked it, but I think it could have been better.
I think, you know, it's interesting you say that because there are actually more female characters in this than...
No, it's not about the ratio between male and female characters.
No, I'm saying that there are some high-profile, kind of strong women in this.
True, yeah, and really good, too.
But I think the kind of movie you're talking about, to say it would bring more people in when we're... I mean... It made a crap load of money this weekend.
That, yeah.
I mean, it is playing to its audience.
Yeah.
Let me respond to some of the things you said. I would try and go through the general plot of this. I just don't know exactly how to do it.
Oh, my God.
I mean, this is really double crosses on top of double crosses.
Yeah.
And this kind of doubles and triples down on the fact that the IMF, the Impossible Mission Force, is kind of this black ops, you know, section of the American government that does the stuff no other, you know, that CIA and FBI can't or whatever. And they're under the gun from Angela Bassett. And then there are, you know, FBI people or CIA. Henry Cavill is a CIA guy. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And he's sent to be part of the team, but basically just to kind of keep them on track or to kill somebody if they have to.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to go before we learn things or like the core?
I don't even think it matters. It's like,
He's an assassin. He's a hired assassin that's supposed to pose as a CSI guy.
Yeah.
Or CSI.
CSI. That's right.
And then Vera Sinise shows up and...
Wasn't that a spoiler already, though, telling him that?
I don't think so. I mean, it's really...
It all makes no sense anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the plot, frankly, is not why anybody's going to one of these movies.
Right.
It is too bad that it's a little too convoluted because there is a point at which you're not sure. This is a problem I have with, say, a lot of superhero movies, especially like some of the Joel Schumacher Batman movies where you have too many bad guys.
Right.
It's like we actually have... Like, the main reason for this involves plutonium that's going to make nuclear bombs that could threaten the world. That's kind of standard, but that's kind of the thing I want.
The Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, you want the mission to be fairly clear.
Yeah.
And to me, the mission, and you've got an asset. Now, here's one of my first problems with this, is that it's been a while since we've seen the last couple of movies. So... I mean, Alex, you and I spent, I think you and Mom also did, because you were in between us.
Yeah.
You and I were going, did Did Michelle Monaghan die?
Did the wife die?
Was it like what happened? And the assassin lady, or the kick-ass lady? Is she was a love interest, right? But she was part of the team once before. Is she not now? I mean, they literally needed a last time on Mission Impossible preview because they really don't over-explain that to you.
Or we just needed to look at the last one before we went to see.
Well, I wish I had known that, or I would have read a synopsis. I mean, there's always going to be a little connectivity because we do have some of the same team back. We've got Ving Rhames, who's great. We've got Simon Pegg, who's back. And I'm so happy they've kept that core group together.
Was Angela Bassett in the other ones? Because she was so damn good. I mean,
she must have been in the last one, right?
I think she maybe was in the last.
It was so seamless bringing her in. I think she must have been. She was, and that was the other thing. I thought she should have been in so much more of the film because she was, I don't know.
Agreed.
Hands right? Down. Yeah, hands yeah.
Down. Well,
yeah.
I bet she's going to be, if you know what I mean, because she's a major character. Yeah, anyway. but the point is, we're already a little lost because we start the movie with a flashback.
Right.
That shows Tom Cruise's character, Ethan Hunt, and Michelle Monaghan's character, name completely forgotten, having a ceremony, and clearly they're no longer together. But that was the biggest question mark that hung over the movie well into...
like hour two.
Yeah. So, but look, I don't know that it bothered me that much other than I wish I was a little more up to speed.
It doesn't get in the way.
Yeah. As far as the core group goes, I will reemphasize, I love that they've kept that basic trio together. I think they found a good combination in those guys.
Me too. Yeah. I like it.
In reference to the script you were talking about, Alex, and feeling like some of the dialogue was a little stale, I mean, the strange thing for me, and even to Mom's point about wishing there were extended scenes of dialogue, there were some of those too. I thought this was a really uneven script because I thought there were things that were really standard and trite, and then I thought there were some things that were really clever that I liked. And I'll the first thing that I liked, and you talked about ticking off the boxes, I kind of liked the fact that they did reach back to the original series, the TV series. They did some fan service there, especially there's an opening scene that I don't want to spoil just in case. People want to see it, but they use a device in the very beginning to fool someone that is very similar to the kind of thing they did in the series.
Yes, and
involving a TV news broadcast.
Yeah, I loved that moment. I think that was
that's a complete throwback to the old series,
and that was one of my favorite moments. And that's when I thought like and that was the first bubble of like this is a Mission Impossible film.
Yes,
and
that's something I don't think they've done in all the movies. I mean, the very first Mission Impossible was a clear reference to what the series was.
Yeah,
I think they lost their way in like the John Woo movie, I think was number two. The movie became less about the team, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
And it became like American James Bond, where it was just...
Well, isn't that how it started? Or do I misunderstand the...
Well, the first movie kind of started that way because his original team gets all killed off.
Right.
And he's all by himself.
Yeah, yeah.
But he kind of has to rebuild and kind of come back.
Right.
But yeah, he kind of turned into like a American James Bond to me, where he just had to kind of, or even like a Bourne movie. Basically,
yes.
It was Tom Cruise as Bourne. So I do like the fact that they are relying on kind of teamwork for this, that it's not just him out on his own, even though he kind of, you know, still kind of drives the narrative of the story.
Yeah.
And it does so really well. Let's give a, you know, props where they...
To Cruise?
Yeah. I can't imagine anybody else doing it as well.
You know, let's go back to his age, because you and I actually had the conversation before this movie came out of how much longer can he do this? And it was around the time, I mean, there's been a lot of publicity about the fact that one of the big stunts in the movie, which is a stunt he did, was a leap across a building. He actually... I don't know if he broke his ankle, but he severely hurt his ankle.
I'm not surprised.
And they kept
he did 13 leaps in this film.
Yeah.
And they kept the shot the actual shot where he hurt himself, they actually kept it in the movie because you see him limp away.
I know which one it was. Yeah, yeah, I know exactly which one it was.
So there's a big deal about the fact that, and you know, a lot of people were like, well, that's Tom Cruise slowing down. But you and I, honey, had this conversation about how much longer can he kind of...
He's so effing impressive. I mean, he honestly, we should all be... How old is Tom Cruise?
He's 56.
Okay, so everyone at 56 should be... He's amazing. He's in amazing shape. It is inspiring. Man or woman, we all want to be in that type of physical condition, and also just the spirit he brings to this role every single time, whether it's a bad Mission Impossible or not. You know, you got to give this guy credit for really, he just brings it every time.
I wonder if, having said that, I wonder if there is an element in this movie of him. They're not going out of their way to point out his age by any means, but did he seem a little, the character, did he seem a little more vulnerable in this one because he wasn't 30-something? Do you know what I mean?
I think
That's one thing that I disagree with, and this is the part that I feel is the most stale about the dialogue. Everything sentimental felt totally fake to me. Felt totally like not quite there
in terms of the
relationships,
like the old relationships,
and just like the past that they've lived, and like
I agree with you.
I thought every time that they slowed down to try and have like character connection, part of me felt like it was a little forced, or just a little bit like peanut butter, you know,
There's one exception, and I probably shouldn't give it away.
No,
but
that's all right.
But there's a moment where, and it was almost comical because we've all heard about how Tom is driving down the freeway and sees someone in distress and then like helps them, and they live as opposed to die because Tom Cruise happened to be on the 101 driving south. But there's actually a moment in the film where he helps a police officer who's just haplessly.
Yeah, this moment bugged the crap.
Really?
Out of
me. Yes. Now, see, I thought that was a genuine moment.
That's interesting.
You did not. Oh my God. See,
you hated it.
Our perspectives on that are different.
Oh, interesting.
I thought it was the most unnecessary moment in the film.
Okay.
It was so.
I disagree, because we needed to know that this character, we needed to be reminded his fatal flaw to someone like Bassett is that he...
And his best attribute, according to others.
And his best... Well, and actually, Bassett says that at one point she contradicts herself and says that's his best attribute,
Well,
too.
She said it was both, yeah. He cares about millions.
Empathy.
As much as he cares about the one.
They pursue this whole thing where a CIA guy is like trying to convince everyone else that Tom Cruise might actually be... can we talk spoilery? Is this fine? That he might actually be the like crazy like unethical
killer.
Yeah,
he's the Kaiser Soze of this movie.
And that would have been an excellent moment for him to actually have to do that, to then like to then convince not just the audience but everyone else in the room that maybe that's the case.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I thought that they missed an opportunity there, and it also felt like, and I don't want to get super social justice warrior about this, but it kind of felt like almost sexualized in a way. Like the woman dying, like this really attractive Italian woman dying against the car, being like, thank God, like you're the last person I get to, like I know you're bad, but like you were trying to do something good for me. I'm dead.
It's like, interesting. I didn't read it that way.
Maybe I'm just hypersensitive to it, but it felt a little dated.
I thought it worked as a good moment of tension. I didn't think of it in terms of what you were saying.
And the tension was great. The resolution of it, I thought was dumb.
Yeah. Okay.
But personally.
No, that's all right.
Yeah.
Well, here's one of the things I'll make the point. This is a little film nerdy about me, but Christopher McQuarrie, who wrote and directed, he has done some really good work, but he wrote The Usual Suspects. That was his very first movie.
Yeah.
And that is a movie entirely, this is no spoiler to anybody who's seen it because it's been around forever. That movie is entirely based upon deception.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that people tout that movie as one of their favorite, was one of the best movies of all time. It is, to me, just a big F you to the viewer, because you spend 2 hours being invested in this like intricate story only to learn, spoiler alert, that it's all a lie, that every piece of it is a lie. And to me, that's not a story worth worth totally. Telling. That's a fuck you to the audience at the end.
Yeah.
And not in a good way.
All
not
the work
in a,
they've done is for naught.
Right. Yeah. And in a way, I feel like he's still doing that. Like he's trying to all these kind of trickaroonies through this out this movie is the thing that bothers me the most.
Yeah. Me too.
Trickaroonies.
I mean, there was some stale dialogue. I also think the movie could have been, I think they missed a lot of opportunity to be funnier.
Yeah.
I felt like.
Especially with Peg. I mean, he had a couple, but yeah, not as many as
they had some good. I think there's an expectation now because, and I hate to say it, but I think because of some of the the way that some of the Marvel superhero movies are written, that they're
forcing the moments.
They're very funny in the midst of some of these action movies. Yeah. And you've got these great personalities, Simon Pegg in particular, who has, you see him doing business that you feel like as an actor, he made a moment funnier, but he's not given the dialogue.
No.
Or the opportunity.
There's an opportunity for a much sharper moment, which really lightens between some of the, I mean, I have to say, there's always violence in these movies. There are a lot of just outright deaths in front of our eyes in this movie. Like really tough deaths. A lot of people die in this one. And I don't think I remember it being so explicit in the past. You feel a little distant from it. We see a lot of people die close up in this
Tom
movie.
Tom Cruise, after like trying to save millions of lives, throws two dudes out of a helicopter. Yeah.
Well, you know, now clearly in the moment, he knows who, you know, he separates the wheat from the chaff.
Of course.
Chaff? No, he's chafing himself, but it's the wheat from the chaff.
Well, the way he was running, that
he
may
was
have
chafing.
That may have why he missed he that last leap. Because he.
But wait, the thigh gap is not as gappy as it
used
to be.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Yes.
This goes back to, you know, we wish Angela had maybe more moments.
You do.
This is clear, or just, all right. I think you guys were just saying this.
No.
I'm yes anding you here.
Okay, great.
If it was more character driven, it would have been better. But this is an action film.
Yeah.
So they only have so many minutes. And as it was, the movie was super long. And so if they're following a formula, there's no room for the character arc. And it would have just, here's the irony. It would be so much better with the character arc. Because I think those moments that you were saying weren't genuine, Alex, would have been if it would have been written in the screenplay, the director would have worked with them in the moment on the scene. All of these actors would have risen to the occasion if they would have just if it was part of the written word.
I think we're all saying the same thing, just in a different way. I don't know that they needed more character development scenes, but they definitely need better character development scenes.
They needed a better arcs.
Yeah,
I think
as far as the action goes, and
that's
I know you've already mentioned the, you know, the car chase stuff. One thing I immediately thought of was, how has, I think you said Italian. They were in Paris most of the time, weren't they? Weren't they in France?
Yeah, most of the time.
Oh, yeah. I might have misspoke.
I do think they used Paris locations better than I've seen an action movie used in a long time. Usually it's establishing shots and you never
that
see them.
Roof scene. How did they find, I would have loved to have been in a location scout. It's okay, we need a roof that goes on forever, that has a seam in the middle of it, this concrete, that Tom Cruise can run down like a catwalk for like 15 freaking minutes, how do you find that?
Also, I think that scene was in Italy because that was the whole Basilica situation,
okay.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it? Because they did Paris and they did
Rome. Okay, that's right. Okay.
But I think you're right. The way they established these, like, they didn't do like the whole panorama and then it has like the little ticker text at the bottom going like Rome. They set up these really beautiful establishing shots from like the perspective of the people. Like cinematography wise, this thing is like gorgeous.
And
setting it up from like a place of like the character looking up at things and like having everything feel bigger than you.
Right.
Like
they don't do these like giant wide shots a lot. I mean, they do a couple times, but even when he's running, like you're always with him, you're always in the perspective, and like seeing Rome and Paris from the pedestrian point of view is gorgeous.
Yeah. I will point out as far as the action goes, and there is a lot of it in this. I do think there were some really standout things, but it sometimes happens to me, some of the best stuff came too early. And the big helicopter set piece at the end.
It was fun.
Is effective for that moment. Mm-hmm. But I thought, well, one, I mentioned the locations because in particular, I wanted to say, why Why have we never seen you? I know you weren't real happy with the motorcycle, you know, chasing kind of thing. But how have we never seen somebody use the roundabout around the Arc de Triomphe and going the wrong way? How have we never seen that before?
Yeah. I think there was a Cary Grant movie a long time ago.
Okay. Really early on, there is a scene with Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill and the actor who was playing in a bathroom, basically. There was a fight scene in a bathroom.
I loved
and
that fight
hand-to-hand,
scene.
That was a great That scene. Is one of the best hand-to-hand fight scenes I've ever seen.
Dude, and talk about character development through physical action. Like, the difference between Tom Cruise's fighting and, what's the actor? Henry Cavill's fighting.
Superman?
Yeah, it's like such a different...
Superman with a mustache? that dreaded mustache.
Like, he's a boxer and Tom Cruise knows kung fu, and you can see the difference in like their physicality about it.
So good.
And that scene came so early in the movie and we didn't get and it was one of the best shot.
The first half
hand
of the movie was actually better than the second.
I think maybe the first half was.
Yeah, yeah.
And also that opening sequence that I talked about that we got you kind of scene. Mm-hmm.
That's the highlight of the film, in my opinion. That was such an effective moment, and I went after it was revealed. Like, it was so satisfying.
So it feels a little imbalanced that they had to get bigger and they had to get more intense. I mean, I don't need to see another scene with a bomb ticking down and, I'm sorry, we're going to spoil it big time now, but saving the world from nuclear annihilation with one second left.
They even reference it themselves. They're like, how much time do we have? He's like, the usual.
Right.
Like, fuck you, every film we ever seen.
Sorry. We're doing
Can we curse on your podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Clearly.
Sorry. Yeah, no, it was a nod to, we're doing this again, but it works. It was a nod to... I don't know how to do podcasts, people. I don't put my face in that.
You're doing so well.
You're doing great. Well, let's wrap things up here because I think people get the general idea. And look, anything we say is not going to matter other than people on the fence. But I will say that it's certainly worthy of the series because these are so far, and maybe with a couple of exceptions, I would have some qualms with especially Mission Impossible 2, I think, and 3 to a certain extent. But the last three have been solid action entertainment movies.
Totally.
With everybody at the top of their game and the technology of what they're doing and Tom Cruise in terms of how he has personified this character, as you said, Charlotte, I think top-notch. But this is probably one of the weaker scripts. I don't necessarily agree with some of the assessment out there that it is the best of the series. I don't think it's overall one of the best action movies, quote, all time, even though some of the action sequences are top-notch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right
that
up there.
Element is like, we never had any criticism about any of those scenes. Like, they were so good.
This is just me, is that it could have been pared down a little bit, because there actually was more than one.
And I think pared down is exactly the phrase I'd use for a lot of my qualms, because I mostly talked pretty negatively, but I really enjoyed the movie, and I would recommend people seeing it.
As did I. But, I loved it.
But I think, but one of my favorite parts about these types of films are the ability for the audience to kind of be in on the switcheroos and like kind of maybe be able to guess, never totally get it, but like have an inkling about how they can like. They can see the trajectory of all the
switcheroos
going.
The joy in actually, for me, is, I know what's coming. I know what's coming. There it is. And then be surprised by something that I didn't expect.
But then what this film did is they had two people waiting in the wings afterward to also be like, but also this and also this.
Yeah.
Which was just a little too much.
It was a little too forced.
To the point where all three of us, I think, I remember hearing you in the theater, Charlotte, go, is Alec Baldwin a bad guy? And it was a genuinely honest question because at one point it doesn't. Bad guy is not even the right question.
It becomes too convoluted. They do too many mask taking off the mask, and again, it's a metaphor, but too many of the mask taking offs too quickly, in too short of a squeezed in sequence of events. So and they've never done that before. They really
not that much. I think one of the issues they're having is
less is fewer is better.
Less is more.
Less is better if it's more impactful. And I think Alex is hugging me right now. That's why I love him.
We're so gross. We're such a family.
We're adorable. All right. Well, what do you say in 2, 3, 4 years we go back for Mission Impossible 7?
Heck yeah.
Hair fallout.
Oh, man. The whole old joke came all the way around.
I've been keeping that one in my back pocket.
Who's going to be the next Jason Bourne? Whatever his name is. Ethan Hawke? What is it? Ethan Lane? Nathan Lane?
Well, no, they tried to make Jeremy Renner the next Bourne.
What are you talking about?
Well, I like Jeremy Renner as the next
podcast, we were wrapping up so beautifully. I gave a great joke.
Hell in a handbasket.
And Mom was doing the theme song.
What is the Mission
Ethan
Impossible?
Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hawke.
Ethan Hawke is an actual actor.
Right. Anyway, yeah, your joke was good.
All right. Go see Mission Impossible. You probably are. Oh, there we go. All right. Get a monkey.
Get a monkey. Get a monkey!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.